I'm Cynthia Rothrock.
I'm Casper Van Dien.
Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the next this episode of the Long Box, guys. My name is Thomas Strange. With me, as always, some of my very best friends since I was a very little kid, Joshua Opper. What are you drinking and how you doing?
I'm doing good, and tonight I'm drinking Narragansett's Autocrat Coffee Milk Stout, and if you're not from New England, might not know what autocrat is. Look it up.
Wait, everyone knows what an autocrat is.
No, autocrat syrup, the coffee syrup. Now you won't have to look it up. You fooled me into answering the goddamn question. Carry on.
We win. For the win. Winning, baby. Tommy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing okay, and I'm drinking Basil Hayden's because it was so good last week, I decided to have it again this week.
Did you have to buy a new bottle yet, or are you just... What are you, teetotaling? What's going on?
I'm getting pretty close to the end of the bottle.
Mikey, how are you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and I am drinking a Magic Hat number 9.
Sounds delicious. I am drinking something I call a Loosey Goosey, which is kind of like drinking a Cuba Libre if you really like Diet Coke too much. So it is two kinds of rum poured in a glass over ice. And you take a sip of that, and then you take a sip of soda. This drink would immediately kill two of the members of the podcast. Or 4/8, if you will. Is that right, Josh? 4/8?
Stop that.
Do I get it right? 5/10? 6/12? 7/14?
Reduce your fractions, people.
If Josh has taught us nothing, he's taught us that. But if comic books have taught us nothing, it's taught us this, that we should appreciate a good villain, because a good villain will make a good superhero better. And one of the best villains of all time is Dr. Victor Von Doom. Victor Von Doom, I'm going to handle this week's autobiography. A biography of Victor Von Doom. Victor was the son of a Romani rich, a witch. He is a supervillain and the king of Latvia. Is that good enough? Do I have to keep going?
Yeah.
All right. First appearing in the Fantastic Four number 5 in July of 1967 and created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, he is one of the big bads of the Marvel Universe. Over the years, he has fought pretty much everyone. He's had his own miniseries, he's even had his own comic book, and he's, of course, had his own supervillain team-ups. The cultural impact of Victor Von Doom cannot be ignored, and the fact that he was the main bad guy for the Fantastic Four at the height of the Fantastic Four's supremacy in the comic book world can't be ignored either. Truly one of the great big bads. He has been affiliated with teams such as the Sorcerer Supremes, the Cabal, the Future Foundation, Astonishing Avengers, Avengers. He's been both good guy and bad guy. His power sets are pretty much almost anything he needs. He's a super scientist with the technology to create not only his insanely great armor, but also one of the most powerful sorcerers on the planet, something that's not really taking into account enough. His secret origin goes back to when him and Reed Richards were in school together. During a lab accident, Victor Von Doom suffered a horrific facial scar, which it turns out to be not all that horrific. But we can get into that later. And he blames Reed Richards, and Reed Richards becomes his lifelong enemy after that. He goes back to his native Latvia, where he not only decides to take over the world on many occasions, but almost does on many occasions. LT, you snickering over there?
No.
Really? Kind of hear some snickering, huh?
No.
Something to add? Little bastard?
No. You're doing fine, Tom. Continue on.
Thanks. It's such a hard one to handle because I want to talk about so many things. But if we just get into some of the minutiae of Victor Von Doom's extensive villainous biography, we'll be here all day. I think some of the highlights, of course, has been Secret Wars.
Well, I just stole mine. That's what we're doing. We're just stealing my shit today.
I'm not stealing your shit. I'm just saying. No. See, that's why I didn't want to get too deep into it, bastards.
Yeah, but then you did. Then you said you weren't going to go there.
I said Secret Wars. I said two words.
Do you want to steal mine next, Tom?
What, your sex tape with the guy who's dressed as Victor Von Doom that one time?
No.
It wasn't that
really,
one.
Really, that's not your favorite? Seemed like it was your favorite because you made us all watch the whole thing.
No, Tom.
Moving on. Victor Von Doom still stays one of the great big bads in all the Marvel Universe. He's been portrayed horrifically on the big screen. We can all agree on that, I hope.
Yeah.
So even in Roger Corman's, which was at least kind of funny, even then, he was not given his just dues. So let's get right into some of our favorite Victor Von Doom storylines. Mikey, what do you got for me to start? Oh, wait, you wanted to go last, didn't you?
No, I'll go first because mine is the secret origin of Dr. Doom. It is the Books of Doom by Ed Brubaker. It's a miniseries consisting of six books. You can pick it up on Amazon as one graphic novel or on Comixology. It goes into the origin story that was originally created by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, but this is the origin story by Ed Brubaker, who is just a phenomenal noir writer. He tells the story as if they're shooting a documentary, and Victor Von Doom is telling the story of how he became Doom. And as with any documentary, they flash back to other people who also tell little bits and pieces of the story. But Doom is just, you know, it shows his incredible brilliance and his incredible arrogance. He says that he was actually cognizant of what was going on while he was in the womb because he was that smart. And he remembers what it was like in the womb, which he blames or attributes to his mother's magic. Now, his mother played the defining role in his life. She was the only person that Victor truly loved, even though she had really cold hands. She was a very accomplished witch of the Romani that were living in the Latveria area. But she was tired of the Baron's troops chasing the Romani from place to place. So she made a deal with Mephisto in order to get her the power to defeat the Baron's soldiers. But what happens is when she gets the power, she kills a ton of the Baron's soldiers, but she also, as the cost of the magic that Mephisto provides, she also kills all the children from 12 to 16 that were in the village. They just all die. And because of that, the group of gypsies have to flee that area, and they're being hounded by the Baron. Mephisto collects her soul in payment, and Doom is left without a mom. His dad tries to help him out, but really it doesn't end up helping much. Doom is so brilliant, he gets recruited not only by the Russians, but also by the U.S. because it's during the Cold War, and they both want to use his scientific brilliance, even though they both realize that he's a sociopath. He goes to Empire State, where he meets Reed Richards, but the whole time he's there, even though he's developing the Doombot technology, he's really trying to build the machine that will allow him to speak to the dead so he can find out if his mother is actually in hell and figure out a way to save her. So not only is he combining the dark magics with science, he's so arrogant that when Reed Richards points out that he's made an error in the calculations, Doom says that Reed is trying to meddle in his affairs and is just jealous of his work. But the resulting explosion of the machine is what scars Doom's face. Now, depending on what version you're talking about, it's either horribly scarred or just a little nick on his face. Doom pursues his own avenues. He leaves the college and goes out on his own, training in the dark arts with some Tibetan monks. He forges the Doom armor himself and has them put it on his face, even though the metal is still hot, and it scalds his face, burning the mask into it. That's one of the defining characteristics of Doom. So this is a great series. If you want the origin of Victor Von Doom, this is the series to read. And one of the few things that you need to pull out of it, other than how great Doom is, it's also that he's tragically flawed by his hubris. And that always is his downfall.
Well, that's about half the podcast right here. That's what our downfall is, our hubris.
And alcoholism.
Oh, yeah. I'll drink to that.
Yeah. Everybody drink.
And one of the things I liked about that series is that Doom and his father were going to be kicked out of the Romani after his mother killed off the children. And Doom forced the tribe to keep him and his dad with them by telling them that if they were kicked out, Doom would learn how to kill them all and would come back and do it.
Yeah, and they believed him. He was a little kid.
And they believed him. Oh, shit, even though he was a little kid, they believed him, and they kept those two people with them the entire time.
That is a good intimidation role for a little kid. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah. It also reminds us how much of the Marvel world has been just brutalized by Mephisto. Like, how many origin stories get traced back to having Mephisto in there, somewhere in there? That guy kicks the Marvel Universe's ass all the time.
Yeah, maybe we should do one on Mephisto at some point, because he really is another one of the big, big, big bads. Now, Josh, you're not a huge Victor Von Doom storyline follower, but you do have something you like. What is your favorite?
Well, I do like he really becomes like the leader of the bad guys in Secret Wars, taking over alien technology, setting up his base, and getting ready to kick the heroes' butts. But I jibber jabber about Secret Wars all the time. I mean, I like Doom as the conceptually, I like Doom as a character. He just didn't cross through a lot of books that I read. I wasn't really a Fantastic Four reader, but when he did come through, I do like just the idea that not only was he a world-class villain, but he had an entire country's resources on hand and was smart enough to really take advantage of international laws and treaties and so on and so forth to make sure he never got caught. Where most villains, you're like, why doesn't this guy just get caught? Well, Doom's like, no, I got diplomatic immunity, and you just can't do that. You just can't cross into my country and do whatever you want, Avengers. This is, you know, you're breaking laws here.
And I love that he has seven different embassies in the United States. All he has to do is make it to an embassy, and he's back on Latvian soil.
And I think you brought up something that I don't know if we've really discussed in detail. Doom is not just a Fantastic Four villain, which is what he starts off as, but Doom becomes the Marvel supervillain. In fact, yeah. I think we can all agree you haven't made it as a superhero until you've either fought Doom or a Doombot.
Or a Doombot.
At least a Doombot, for God's sakes.
Which is one of the other great things about Doom. He sends off Doombots to do his bidding, and they don't even realize they're not Victor Von Doom. So,
oh, yeah, these robots think for sure. Well, those other seven Doombots were Doombots, but I'm Victor Von Doom.
Right, exactly.
They are programmed with an arrogance that no other robots have.
It's true.
It's true.
All these Doombots are so dumb. I love that about Doombot number 7. And speaking of not making it as a good guy until you fight Victor Von Doom, let's talk about Power Man versus Victor Von Doom, Heroes for Hire, number 8 and 9. Luke Cage is hired by Victor Von Doom to chase down one of his errant Doombots that has become sentient enough to know that it's a Doombot and doesn't want to go back to being a Doombot. It wants to be like a minor crime lord in New York City, as any Doombot would. Victor Von Doom decides to pay Luke Cage the amazing sum of $200 for tracking down the Doombot. When Victor Von Doom decides not to pay, Luke Cage does the only sane thing possible. He goes to the Baxter Building, he steals a pogo plane, and flies to Latvia. Now, he doesn't really steal a pogo plane, because the Fantastic Four come out and stop him. But then, when they find out what he's going to do, they shrug their shoulders and say, all right. Because shooting an African-American man into a foreign country just to harass one of your enemies seems like a pretty good idea to the Fantastic Four, you dicks. That was one of the big dick moves of the film. Mr. Fantastic of all time going, all right, Luke Cage, I'll program the plane to fly you straight into the middle of Latvia. After that, you're on your own.
Well, that just goes to the power of Luke Cage, how persuasive he is.
Oh, he rolled a 20 on that persuasion. Remember, this is all about $200. Luke Cage gets to Latvia in the middle of a Doombot insurrection. He is still trying to collect his $200 debt, doesn't really care which side wins, but he ends up helping Victor Von Doom slay some of the errant Doombots, and Victor Von Doom decides to pay him the $200, so Luke Cage will go back to Harlem in the jet that he kind of stole. My favorite line of all time is when Victor Von Doom says, when my men reported a crazy black man in the Fantastic Four crack, I knew it had to be you. Luke Cage's reply, where's my money, honey? Luke Cage straight into Dr. Doom's face, where's my money, honey? Greatest panel ever.
And the irony is, it costs more than $200 in fuel to fly to Latvia.
Yeah.
Come on, Reed Richards, you dick. Plus, you didn't really think you were getting the pogo plane back, did you?
Yeah, what's that thing sell for?
That's a one-way ticket, pal.
Stripping that apart.
If it was pre-oil crisis, it might have been about $200 for the flight.
Jeez. So that's my pick of the greatest Dr. Doom story of all time. My favorite part of that, though, is that all the Doombots who realize that they're just Doombots and were so despondent, they either wanted to die or kill Victor Von Doom. That was their only two things they wanted. Tommy, what was yours?
My favorite run is Infamous Iron Man.
Such a good series.
From 2016-2017. This is where Dr. Doom decides to take on the mantle of Iron Man because Tony Stark has passed on from this mortal plane. And he starts becoming the good guy, and no one believes him. And it is hilarious because half the time he's just trying to prove that he's has changed his ways and is becoming a good guy. And the other half of the time, he's rounding up all of his former colleagues and putting them away in prison. So he goes to S.H.I.E.L.D. and he's like, hi, I just want to work with you guys. And they're like, how can we capture you? What can we do to capture Dr. Doom?
At one point, I believe he says, altruism is exhausting. I don't know how Richards and Stark does do it.
It's hilarious. He rounds up all of these supervillains. He captures them all. One gets away. He has the villain convinced that he's killed everyone. And the supervillain runs to S.H.I.E.L.D. and gives up because he doesn't want to face Doom because he's afraid that Doom's going to kill him. Meanwhile, the rest of the supervillains that were going to attack Doom as a sort of proactive strike in defense of him rounding up supervillains, is all already on the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, all knocked out by Doom. And it's just a fantastic series where Doom is just constantly trying to convince people that he is just trying to be a good guy. He fights Riri Williams. He's trying to convince her that, you know, he's just trying to do right by the Iron Man armor, that he's just trying to be one of the good guys. He fights Ben Grimm, who's an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., who's tracking him, trying to take him in.
And I don't think you should reveal who the big bad of the series is, because if you've been paying attention to our podcast, you probably might figure it out, but I don't think you should reveal it.
I'm not going to reveal who the
Thanks,
big
Tom.
Bad is.
Is it? Was I right?
You son of a bitch. I just said not to reveal it, and you're like, oh, well, it's got to be Mephisto.
Was I right?
Yeah, you were right.
Robert.
That's why I'm saying you suck, because you were right.
Yeah.
Sorry, it was just kind of right there, guys.
He sends Ben Grimm on vacation. It's fantastic. He teleports Ben Grimm, like, off to Paris, puts him up in a place for a couple weeks, tells him to take a vacation. It's just a fantastic series.
And I think it's the best part of the series is that the reason that he's doing all of this is because he made himself a god during the Secret Wars. And he remade the world in his image, and he found out that world really sucked. So he's trying something new, because Reed Richards always beats him, and Reed Richards is altruistic. So he thinks, if I can become altruistic, nobody will be better than me. So it's still his hubris that's driving him, even though he doesn't realize it. And as a little FU to him, when after Secret Wars, Reed Richards does repair his face, which is something Doom could never do, even when he had the power of the gods.
It's a great series, though.
It is. I haven't read that particular series, but it sounds like a good one.
It also features Doctor Strange, too.
Ooh, I love Doctor Strange.
So
literally.
Can I add one more series that I think our listeners should check out?
Sure.
Because Doom is one of the most powerful magicians in the Marvel Universe. He can actually – there are a few people he holds as peers. Scientifically, it's Tony Stark and Reed Richards. And magically, the only one he holds as a peer – is Doctor Strange, and even he still can't believe that Strange is the Sorcerer Supreme over Doom. He's still shocked by that. And
shocked, I say.
The if you want to read a horrible, perfectly set Doom story in the Fantastic Four, if you go to, I don't know what volume, fuck you, Marvel, but it's the Fantastic Four from 1998 to 2012, issues 67, 68, 69, and 70. It's called Unthinkable. And Doom, when he was a kid, in the books of Doom, he falls in love with a little girl in the village, in one of the villages, another Romani girl, whose name is Valeria. Later on, he finds Valeria living in the U.S. because she has fled Latveria because she knows who Doom is. And he convinces her that he wants redemption. And the only way that he can possibly get redemption is for her to love him. So he goes through the entire first issue trying to convince her that he needs to change, and she's the only one who can do it. And finally, she professes her love to him. And then he's like, great, I made a deal with some devils, and in order to seal the pact, I had to give him something that I couldn't give. That's someone who loves me truly. And he kills her.
Spoiler alert.
That's just the prelude. That's the first issue. And the rest of the series is him kidnapping the Richards family's children and trying to sell them to devils. It is a phenomenal four-issue run. I really recommend you guys pick it up. It's called Unthinkable.
I sold my devil.
So does he get a really good price for them Richards children? I mean, what are we talking here?
I don't want to spoil the ending. Unlike Tom. Tom, you want to just tell everybody?
Is it Mephisto?
No, it's not Mephisto.
Damn it. It might be Tempo. All right. I think that about does it for any last thoughts on Victor Von Doom. One thing I wanted to mention that we didn't talk about is some of his great inventions on the time platform. One of the greatest time machines ever invented was his.
So,
time machines.
I just want to say that, you know, it seems to me like I've never read a lot of Fantastic Four, but it seems to me that Victor Von Doom has – his character has really evolved over time, because it seemed like back in the 80s when I thought of Victor Von Doom, I was always thinking of him as more of a scientist and not really as much of a sorcerer, whereas now he's kind of equal parts scientist and sorcerer.
Yeah,
I think they kind of played down the sorcerer in the beginning and played it up later.
Yeah, they wanted to make him Reed Richards' equal as far as the science, yeah. But they needed to give him the magic so that way he could add that into fighting the Fantastic Four so he could fight all four of them.
But he really seemed to be like an evil Iron Man initially, whereas then he kind of evolved to become more than that with the magic.
All right, I guess that does it for Dr. Doom, time platform maker, Doombot creator, sorcerer supreme at one time. What hasn't Dr. Doom done? Found true love?
No, he's found it. And he's killed it.
He sold it off to a devil.
I'm going to give you a second. I'm gonna ask if Mike has something good at the front of the long box.
I do have something good at the front of the long box. If you are a fan of Edgar Rice Burroughs.
And who isn't?
Well, me, because I don't know half these characters. But there's a new series out by Bill Wellingham, who did Fables. Instead of turning on the classic Fables of the universe, he's just focusing in on all the characters that Edgar Rice Burroughs created, all the way from Tarzan to John Carter and all these other pulp characters in between. It is called The Greatest Adventure. It is being put out by Dynamite Comics. They're about 9 or 10 issues into the series right now. You can pick it up fairly cheaply on Comixology, or you can go to your local comic book retailer, see if you can find those back issues. It's got so many different characters that I've never heard of, including Jason Gridley, Korak the Killer, and all these pulp characters that are right out of Burroughs' novels. So Willingham has really poured his heart and soul into grabbing these characters from these short stories and weaving a narrative that finds them all on a quest together.
Well, that sounds like something that's right up my alley.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of when I picked up the series, Tom. I was like, you know, I know the perfect person for this.
Yeah, so kind of like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, but just for Burroughs characters.
Yes. And less rapey.
Oh, well, you know, no Alan Moore.
Well, strike one.
I didn't say not rapey. I just said less rapey.
That might be a good thing.
Yeah.
Might be. We're going to withhold on that one. Tommy, what do you got at the back of the long box?
Metal. It's a sci-fi series by Paul Alexander and Butch. I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
I think
name,
it's Geese.
Geese?
Juice. Juice, I think.
Or Juice or Geese. It's spelled G-U-I-C-E. It's published by Humanoids. It came out in 2015. It's a science fiction tale. It's of an empire that's set up almost like a medieval power structure. It has an emperor with different nobles, and they're sort of similar to medieval times in that they are constantly feuding. The nobles are between each other, and the folks get into almost like in surrogates, they get into these machines that allow them to remotely power combat robots that are sort of like medieval knights. They have swords, axes, shields, typical medieval weaponry, and they fight using these surrogate robots that are remote controlled. All of a sudden, a threat from a different galaxy comes in that is stripping away different planets of theirs of power and killing off everything. And so they have to band together to try to fight this alien presence. And it's filled with deception and betrayal. And the emperor is trapped in his machine and his body is killed, and it's a great story with fantastic art. It didn't really seem to end, so I hope they're going to continue to print more issues of it. Right now there's 3 volumes out, and it was fantastic.
Well, that sounds really good. Something I would definitely want to read.
I think you would like it, Tom.
And that's good. Thank you.
I like robots.
Who doesn't like robots?
Yeah, everyone likes robots.
Crazy people. Josh, do you have a tangent about robots?
A little bit. So just recently, the FAA and a couple other companies opened the first air-controlled flight corridor for drones to test out deliveries and all kinds of things and how they can monitor and manage low-altitude air traffic. When do you think we're going to get to the point, or do you guys think you would ever be comfortable getting in a small drone just as a airport-to-airport or a town-to-town transportation? When do you think – I mean, even automated cars these days aren't – they're getting better, but clearly not perfect. But nothing is ever going to be. So what do you think the future of automated travel is, since we're starting to open it up to the skies rather than just our roads?
Yeah, I think that's going to be incredibly dangerous because people suck on the roads themselves. I can only imagine them in the air. I would prefer jetpacks only because it'd be Darwinism watching people blow themselves up.
I would love me a good jetpack.
Yeah, and also jetpacks, you'd get to literally watch people burn.
There'd be a disco inferno out there.
It would be. And I think in the drone scenario you're talking about, are you talking about people driving the drones or the drones being self-driven?
If there were people driving them, they wouldn't be drones.
Yeah. What the?
Well, people are always manning them anyways, right? You're talking about remote control drones.
A lot of the drones are just following a signal now. You can they have wearable things like on your wrist, and the drone just follows you at a certain camera angle. A lot of people aren't physically flying the drones; they're just putting the drone up and giving it some basic instructions on what to do. And the drones that would say deliver packages from Amazon, they will be self-driving or GPS based, not human drivers. So that's mostly what I'm talking about. Robots, sky robots, robots of the goddamn sky.
We've already seen that robot drivers are probably better than real drivers. That's pretty much going to be a more and more in-your-face fact. I think driving ourselves from place to place when we're in our 70s and 80s is going to be quaint. Oh, you still drive. That's adorable. That's a skill set. Not a lot of people can do that. And I think it's going to be the same thing with small hopping flying drones. Flying drones that go from A to B seem like the technology is already there. We just haven't gotten the power ratio and everything ready to do it. I mean, a quick sky taxi from my house to work seems very feasible. And I think it's going to be something that's just going to be rote de guerre by the time we're in our 80s or 90s.
There is already an all-electric small airplane.
So my concern would be the noise, because if there were a lot of drones doing this, that would be making things terribly noisy around.
Well, that's why I think they open a specific corridor in New York to test those things. I think a lot of times it's going to be either A, following highways, or following things like power lines, and you're just going to have to figure out what that noise pollution is and manage it like you would airplanes, right? So people who live within 30 miles of an airport right now, right, they get hammered. So we'll just figure it out. We'll just make them quiet.
Yeah. It seems like the drone corridor you're talking about seems to be a lot lower than an airplane. So if it gets heavily used like a highway, it just seems like it would be murder on the eardrums.
Well, it would be less than 3,000 feet for that sort of thing. But if you put it at 3,000 feet, you're not hearing a drone, not the size they are now.
Okay.
That's pretty far up there.
Other than that, I welcome our robot overlords.
Me too. Come on, robots. Get it together. The coordinated drones for the Wonder Woman thing over Los Angeles?
No. Yeah, what the fuck?
5,000 drones, making the Wonder Woman symbol over LA and then reconfiguring on the fly to do other things. All coordinated, all at the same time. Look at the Wonder Woman premiere, Drones Over L.A.
Tom, what do you have for social irrelevance this week?
I got nothing. And that just about does it for the Longbox guys this week. We got a couple of plugs we want to do. Mike and LT and Josh, we got a lot of good things coming up. Mike, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to make it out to Philadelphia, I hear.
I will not.
That's too bad, because we're going to have a great time doing two panels. One of them is going to be our super groovy game show called Last Nerd Standing, where we pitch you questions, you guys yell out answers. The Last Nerd Standing always wins a prize. That'll be all three of us. And we're also doing Stupid Supervillains and Why We Love Them. Always a good time. Josh and Tommy, you guys are going to be making it out for that, right?
Yep.
Hopefully I'll be there for both.
Hopefully.
And that is May 17th and 18th. Thursday the 18th is our trivia. And Thursday the 17th is our trivia. And Friday the 18th is our panel on supervillains.
And always a good time.
But and we will have a table all weekend long at Wizard World Philadelphia.
Yeah, we will.
Yes, that's correct.
Like you read about. I mean, we'll have a banner. You will. Yeah. You'll technically read about it.
You know what Lionel Richie would say about that if he was there?
No.
All weekend long. All weekend.
Oh, I thought he would just say hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Wait, so in order to see the Long Box guys, I would say it's going to be easy, like a Sunday morning.
Yeah.
All right, that's more Commodores.
Yeah, but, it's Commodores.
But
you're off on your own there, like you're dancing on the ceiling or something. It's crazy. I got nothing else.
Yeah, I got no other.
Out of my trip, get in my car.
That's Billy Ocean.
I know it's Billy Ocean. I was kind of hoping someone would call me out on that. Thank you.
Speaking of music, I'd like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com, or you can buy their music on Bandcamp and iTunes. Did you guys enjoy their Dust in the Wind cover from last week?
I was about to say, was that Kirby Crackle doing that Dust in the Wind cover for our greatest of all time Infinity Stones one?
Yes, for both our podcasts, both our GOAT and our regular podcast, we used Dust in the Wind cover by Kirby Crackle. Speaking of our greatest of all time, I think we should encourage everybody, if you can afford it, to go ahead and sponsor us at Patreon, patreon.com/thelongboxguys. Your support helps us pay for our RSS feed and our website. We really appreciate it. For just $1 a month, you can help us out and you get access to our podcast, The GOAT, The Greatest of All Time, which we put out every week that we do a podcast.
That's right. And this week's Greatest of All Time was a super... Oh, no. This week was which Infinity Stone was the most powerful?
No. This week's...
And that was
No, this week's was... Greatest adolescent of superhero of all time.
Well, I'm at the one they can listen to right now.
You know, not we're not doing future. This. You know, you we're mean, not doing this live.
Right. Oh!
Infinity Stone.
I'm
sorry.
I'm under the effect of the time stone. I keep going back and forth there. I'm sorry. And let's also thank our friends over at IanLino.com.
You mean Geek and Sundry?
Yeah.
I mean geekorthodox.com?
That's it.
I mean those guys.
Way to correct me, Mike. Dick. I mean geekorthodox.com. Tammy and Ian Lino, the Linos, four of the sexiest feet I've ever come across in my entire life. And just terrific people.
And if you like their geeky stuff that they sell on Geek Orthodox, you should also check out their music. Because Ian is one of the members of Eddie and the Whirlpools, another great geek band.
Yeah, and they did an all Star Wars gig just recently, didn't they?
Yeah, for May the 4th.
For May the 4th. I'm more of a Revenge of the 5th kind of guy, but May
Revenge
the 4th.
Revenge of the 6th. It's Revenge Thank of the you. 6th.
Thanks. Thanks.
Well, sixth. Folks. Well, Tom and Mike duel it out. I'd like to remind everybody, if you haven't bought your tickets to Wizard World Philadelphia yet, you can use the discount code LONG20 to get 20% off your ticket to Wizard World Philadelphia. That's right. The Long Box guys give back. Use our discount code to get discount tickets.
We won't say 20 what, but it's long 20. And Josh, you'll be in Philadelphia, and they have those great donuts, which, you know, you shouldn't eat, but you're probably going to. Is that your sector?
Yes, everywhere where there's giant delicious donuts is my sector.
Giant delicious donuts. And Mike, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
And Tommy? Sweet, sweet Tommy. Any last words, buddy?
Yeah, man. Don't diss what you hate. Promote what you love.
Well, that's a great saying, Tommy. You'll live a lot longer saying that. And don't forget what I always say. This might be not be the podcast you want, but it's the podcast you deserve. Thank you for the Long Box, guys, and have a great night.
We didn't really talk about the whole rape of Sue Richards.
You want to get into the rape of Sue Richards? Go right ahead, my good friend.
Yeah, don't really want to get into that, but he's Doom's a little rapey when he's a god.
A little rapey.
All right, guys.